welcome back, Sharks MTG Podcast, back for the first episode of 2023. We actually had a quiet year last year, all things considered, just two shows, I guess, the nature of life happening. So hopefully this year will be a bit more eventful. And to kick it off, I have, as always, Kalyan Petkov is joining me from Vegas. Kal, you're in Vegas, you're at home at the moment?
Yeah, back in Vegas. I actually had a short break here. I got my 1 week annual leave as an American. You know how it goes here. Went to Mexico, to Tulum, and now back and ready to work and play some magic. So happy.
Yeah, very selfishly, as I pointed out to you, very selfishly going on holiday to Mexico and stuff when we could be cube drafting and all kinds of wonderful stuff. But joining us today, we have a very special guest. A bloke by the name of Rishan Naidu, who you may or may not know of, but you will after this. Rishan won the super qualifier, super PDQ, whatever it's called, super qualifier. I think that's the term MTGO, which is a big deal. It's a tough tournament, and we'll get into that. Welcome to the show, Rishan. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Cool, Rishan. First and foremost, for those we've got to know you because, I mean, you basically set up Discord for us, which we don't really use it, but you're the guy who set up Discord, you know, and a couple of Luddites like myself and Bob didn't know anything about it, and we're starting the podcast, I think, back in 2019. So, you know, we've got to interact with you and know you through that sphere initially. But for the listeners out there who don't know you, please tell us, you know, a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, you know, and how your magic journey has begun, I guess.
Okay. Hi, I'm Rishan Naidu. I go by the name of Boldarov online, on Magic Online, on Magic Arena, on Twitter, basically any online platform. I live in Johannesburg, and I have been playing Magic since the release of, I think it was Amonkhet, was when I started playing, which is like, I think like 5 years ago.
2017.
And yeah, 5 or 6 years ago. And yeah, I've been playing ever since. Or
Breaks,
but yeah. Yeah. I took like breaks here and there, and I've been playing online and paper. But yeah.
Hey, I have a question for your start into Magic, Rishan. How did you find out about Magic? Because that must have been, I think we didn't have Amonkhet yet. I think we started with Hour of Devastation on Magic Arena. So you must have made it right prior to the transition into digital.
Yeah, so we went to school camp once, and one of my friends, so in the school that I used to go to, there was like people who played Magic, and one of my classmates like watched them and was interested in the game, so he invested in the game and brought it to us during class camp, and we just learned with him, and I don't know, it all snowballed from there. We went to like game stores, and yeah, it just became more competitive, and yeah.
And were you still in Johannesburg back then?
Yes, I was.
All right, so some of the stores, did you go to like the Nexus, or which are some of the other stores you would go to at the time?
Yeah, so starting out, I like exclusively went to Nexus. I went for like a straight year. I just went to Nexus. I just got to know the people there. It was pretty cool.
Okay, and without offending, I guess we don't have any listeners that play Commanders, but how did you not fall into the trap of playing Commander, or are you a casual Commander player on the side as well?
I don't know. I just always loved competitive stuff. It was just always like fun playing in tournaments, and they didn't really do the Commander was like kind of just a casual, just like have fun play. It's like a board game type of like format, you know. I mean, it's still fun. I'd like play it, but I don't know. I just got more attached to like the competitive side of Magic, I guess.
Okay, I mean, that certainly resonates with me, and I think it does with Kiran as well. We both are kind of drawn to analytical topics and want to kind of engage, and this is a good outlet for that, but prior to Magic, did you have any other competitive outlets at school? Did you like play sports or chess or anything like that?
Not really. I mean, I did play chess a little bit, but like just with my brother, and of course I like wanted to beat him, so there was like some competitive aspect there, I guess. But I don't know. It was like mainly like other online games. I was into Minecraft at the time. I played that. But yeah, there wasn't anything similar to Magic that was competitive.
Okay, so we could say that Magic truly stoked the competitive fire in the Boulder Elf. That's cool, man. That's great. Okay, sorry, I'll hand it back to you, Karan. I just was curious.
Yeah, just, I mean, on that, you know, Commander, don't know if you're aware of this, Rishon. I found out in the last episode we recorded, CEDH stands for Competitive EDH. Or competitive, I'm probably pronouncing it. Is it the right thing? Is that what it's called? CEDH, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, maybe not to offend our I don't know, our comrades who prefer 100 card decks and games of politics. That's supposedly something. But anyway, here we are, the year 2023. This event that you won, Rishan, the Super Qualifier, was that the last week in December or was it the first, or was it last week, as in the first week of January?
I think it was the last week in December. It was 2 weeks ago, it was Tuesday.
And it's remarkable. I remember because I woke up that morning and I saw your handle on Twitter and, you know, it said, you know, I won or whatever your post was, right? I won this event. And I looked and I wasn't following you. I didn't realize I wasn't following you. So I followed you and I was like, wow, that's pretty great. And like, it's one thing to win a tough PDQ, but it's another thing. And it's the reason why like players like me just don't do it. It's because the time zones are brutal. I mean, what time did this event actually start? And, you know, how many rounds was it?
So it started at like, I think it was like 4 p.m. And it was like a reasonable time compared to like how events usually are online. But
yeah,
it was very long. It ended at like 3 a.m. in the morning. It was like a 9-round event, I think, and cut to top 8.
9 rounds with top 8. So you had to play 12 rounds of Magic, and you're playing like you're playing the matches that mattered the most at, you know, ungodly hours. It's truly incredible what you achieved. I mean, it's truly remarkable. And Cal, or, you know, we have this discussion all the time. He's like, oh, why don't we play challenges? Why don't you do this? And I just can't. I just refuse because I don't have the, I don't know, the endurance or the will to sit up, you know, late at night doing that. So, man, hats off to you. But look, tell us a bit about the event. It was Standard, right? Have you been playing a lot of Standard heading up into this qualifier?
So that week was a week of just Super Qualifiers. There was a Modern one on Monday, and then it was Standard, then Pioneer, then I think like Legacy, then Vintage. It was just like 5 straight Super Qualifiers every day. And so like a couple weeks before, I kind of just planned on playing each one that I could, because I didn't have much to do, because I was heading into university. So I just had a month. I just finished school in like November. So I just had a month of just, or a couple months of just sitting and, I don't know, I was looking for hobbies. So I just went back to Magic Online and I found those Super Qualifiers. So I thought I'd just try my luck and play in each of them. And coming to the event, I was like, or coming up to the event like a couple of weeks before, I was planning, because I saw Callum Cameron Smith. He was posting a lot about Mardu Midrange, which was apparently a deck that was crushing Arena and beating the best deck at the moment, which was Grixis, which was like the only deck seeing play. It was like a one deck format. But then there was like a new deck that showed, which was Blue Red Ramp, which I looked and I thought it was just like the most horrendous matchup for Mardu. So then I just like last minute switched to Esper, because I saw some people in Japan were having a lot of success with it. Yuta Takahashi, who was the world champion in 2021, was playing it a lot in challenges and doing well, but he was like solo playing the deck. No one else was playing the deck. He was just crushing. So I don't know. People just assumed it was not the deck being good, but it was just Yuta, because Yuta was just a beast in Magic. But yeah, I didn't do that much testing. I just kind of looked at the format and looked at what decks were popular. Picked Esper.
To be fair, Yuta is a beast in Magic and usually plays weird stuff that only he can do well in, like you know, putting up results at Pro Tours and Grand Prix with fairies when it was way past its sell-by date, you know. So you essentially picked up, you know, one of these decks based on what was doing well on the Japanese circuit, as it were. I mean, I'm curious because I think from what we've seen, and to be, you know, disclaimer here, myself and Cal haven't played a lot of Standard, or no Standard, in fact, on my side for a very long time. Standard seems to be a format that just is devolved into, you know, these power cards, Fable of the Mirror Breaker and Wandering Emperor, right? Like, so is that really what you were anticipating going in? Just tons of Fables and Wandering Emperors and Grindfests all around?
Yeah, I was definitely expecting like a ton of Fable matchups. But I think the deck, like, it definitely did really well against them. Because, I don't know, Fable is just not a very aggressive card. It's definitely like really grindy, and my deck was trying to be kind of like tempo aggressive, so I felt like I could just kill them before Fable is even important, because it like really only becomes like a big threat when it like flips and starts copying some of your creatures that have ETB effects, and then it just like overwhelms you in card advantage. And but yeah, my deck kind of just killed them before it could do anything.
Which is interesting because, you know, I'm looking through your deck list and I mean it's obviously an ambitious mana base, you know, all kind of, being a solidly three colored deck. It's a solidly Esper deck, right? Like having to cast blue white spells on turn two and, you know, double black spells on four and double white on four. It's incredibly ambitious. So like, was the mana just good enough where it didn't really matter and it didn't slow you down in that sense, because you're talking about going under these Fable decks?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it didn't come up too often. Like, we have like Plays of Heroes and Rafine's Tower, which are both like they both just tap for any mana basically in the deck. The mana base did come up sometimes. I did lose to a mono red aggro deck in the Swiss. Because I had to play like pain lands and it kind of punished me. But I don't know. It's just like I don't think Grixis' threats were very important. Meanwhile, like most of my threats were. Like if I played a Rafine, they had to kill it. If I played a Shieldred, they had to kill it. If I played a Wedding Announcement or the Big Dragon AO. And their stuff didn't really matter that much. It was just Shieldred and Fable like sometimes mattered if the game was really going late. I don't know. I just thought my deck was just better.
To be clear, the top eight was also, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the top eight was pretty stacked. I think I want to say Marcio Cavallio was in the top eight, if I recall correctly. Did you end up playing him?
He was in the top eight, but I did not play him, though.
Yeah, it was pretty stuck. I can see Sandy Dog, MTG in 10th. Obviously, Marcio has finished 5th. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, I will say that, man. Like, you won a top eight that included one of the best players of all time. Like, easily Hall of Fame resume on the Marcio. Obviously, they've seemed to have done away with that. But yeah, that's pretty damn impressive, man. How many players was it in the event altogether?
I think it was 242. I don't know if that was the one the next day, because I remember playing in the Pioneer one and the Standard one. I think one of them had 240 players. Both of them were 9-rounders, so they both had like at least 200. And they had like both at least 216 players, I think.
Yeah, because of course, also impressively, you miss out on breakers, or did you miss out on an actual match point, on a point to make the top eight of the super qualifier the next day on Pioneer? Because I see you finished 12th.
Yeah, the next day I was 7-1 and I lost 1-in, and I didn't have good breakers. Oh, it was because there was a lot of players, so only X1 made it. It was like a perfect cut to top eight. No X2 can make top eight in that event.
Yeah, which is insane, right? Like it's completely insane. Like when you think about that, like just no wiggle room. I don't think people understand this concept, like how tough some of these events, particularly online, are without there's no IDs. So it really makes it tricky to you. I've had many instances like that where I've played these big events and you just you have an insane record and you finish short. So yeah, it's super impressive, mate. Also, I mean, these events, even though they're called super qualifiers, historically they qualify you straight to the pro tour. Of course, now the system has been rejigged, and I guess you've qualified now for the regional championship in Naples, if I'm not mistaken. How do you feel about that, and will you be attending?
I'm still kind of happy. If qualifying for regionals is still like pretty huge for me. I think in the past it was the top two qualified for pro tour, and now it's the top four qualify for regionals. But I'm super excited. I do want to attend, but we're just gonna have to see how university goes. I do have to like do well as my first year, but I am planning on going.
Oh, what are you studying, by the way?
I'm studying computer science. I'm trying to get into programming. Oh, it depends on where I get accepted. But if I get accepted into UCT, it's computer science. But if I get accepted into University of Pretoria, then it's just going to be physics.
Oh, man. Either way, those are pretty nerdy adjacent fields. So your lecturers will give you a pass. Don't worry about that. They'll allow you a few days break to go to magic it up.
Don't yeah, make sure help. You mention why you're going to need the time off in detail. that was always fun for me, trying to tell my housemaster at 15 years old, oh, hey, I qualified to the pro tour in Japan. And he'll be like, is that sports? And I'll be like, no, it's a fantasy card game. He's like, okay, well, expect to have detention for a week when you come back. Meanwhile, everybody else is getting like honors for swimming and stuff. Yeah, great.
Nice.
But do you feel more fired up now, Rishan? Because you said you were looking for hobbies during your break, and you kind of made your way back into Magic Online as a result. Were you? So it's a two-part question. Were you playing much Magic prior to finishing school? I'm sure you had final exams in the last few months. And secondly, having won such a big event and having the opportunity to go overseas now, I'm sure we'll talk about that more with regards to the even more limited possibilities for South Africans right now. But do you see yourself playing more Magic, time permitting, once you start university?
I would like to. The week was like crazy for me because I wasn't planning on like holding the hobby. It was just meant to be just for the month. But now I'm like addicted to Magic again. I probably will try and keep playing. I'm trying to take a break now because I don't want to get burnt out before the qualifier. There's like a list of showcase events this month, but they're like really hard to do well in. You have to like grind prelims every day, and then you have to top eight one of these events, and they qualify you for another qualifier, which you have to win that to get anything. So I'm going to try and take a break from these events and just try and focus on Standard when the new set comes out. As soon as I finished school, that's kind of where I started. I wasn't playing at all while I was in school. I just kind of got on Magic Online when I finished school and played a few leagues. And then I played like a Vintage Challenge, I think, which I won like 4-2 in, I think. And then yeah.
Which deck did you play in the Vintage Challenge?
I played Cradle Vine.
Okay. Does that have that has Bazaar in it as well, right?
It does, yeah. Bazaar Baghdad. Yeah, okay.
Sorry, go on.
Oh no, yeah, that was I just played leagues and Vintage. And I looked at deck lists and watched people play.
How about the local game store scene? Do you still get to go out much? Some of the friends that you started playing Magic with, or maybe friends that you've made over the years playing in person, are they still playing?
Yeah, I actually did play. I forgot. I did play a trios event. Karan, you were there as well. We played like trios triple modern. And we managed to win the event, which was pretty cool. That's the only.
Yeah, I think. They beat us. We did play you. We played you. I think in was it a draw? Did we draw in round one?
It was
one?
A draw. It was a draw. Yeah.
It was that. That's it. That's it. We did draw. I remember. Yes.
Did you guys? Were you in the same seat? That's the real question.
No, unfortunately not. I was playing against one of his teammates.
Who were you? Were you playing? What? Which teammate were you playing against? The guy with Tron, or were you playing against Richard with Hammer?
I was playing against Tron. I remember. Yeah, it was Tron.
All right. So he was playing against Ruben, who Cal, you might remember, my friend Ruben. Ruben hadn't played Constructed Magic. We realized since Worlds, when he lost went to Worlds, which was like 2011. So, he liked, Tron decks back in Standard in the 2000s. So I just picked up a Tron deck and I gave it to him. And he had to literally read like almost everything. And
did you put Thanel in there for him?
Unfortunately not. I probably should have. Obviously, he was losing anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered. Probably should have done that.
Little Mephidros vampire action maybe?
Yeah, vampire and Triskelion, vampire Mephidros, yes. Unbeatable combo. Platinum Angel. So Rishon, you've been in the tier then. Yeah, listen, mate, we can give you some education. Like these are cards. I mean, I don't even know. He would have barely been born back then when these things were. That would have been when Mirrodin came out, which I guess would have been a bit later. So you were definitely around. You were just very young. But yeah, these were powerhouses of standard Tron decks from yesteryear.
It sounds like a commander player's binder. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, listen, man. Magic back, a while ago is weird. There are times where oppressive decks featured things like Wild Mongrel and Psychotog, which are really, really bad creatures, by today's standards. And then there are also times where things are just completely broken, like original, Affinity, for example, which is just just beyond insane. So it goes through those phases. Yeah, Cal.
Yeah, just to contextualize this, Rishon is a resident Zoomer, so he's actually 19 years old.
I'm a Zoomer.
And yeah, true. Yeah. Back then, what was that like 2003, 4 probably? So just
yeah. So we've been playing Magic longer than Rishon's been alive. Like for context, which is kind of insane when you think about
yeah,
it.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. My friend, somebody asked me, I was having a chat to an old friend today, and, he asked, he lives abroad, and he's like, oh, when am I coming to visit? And I said, well, I have to go to Italy in March. And he's like, oh, what are you doing? Are you going for work? What's the story? And I'm like, no, it's a Magic event. And he says, oh, you're still doing that? He says, you must be like a really old guy there now, aren't you? And he's like in this really mocking tone. I'm like, yeah, I'm one of the really old guys, dude. But anyway, so you've been in a tear then, Rishon. I guess the break and the exams and everything got your brain supercharged, and you've been smashing it. The RC is obviously, as you say, it's going to be a big opportunity for you to play competitive Magic on a global stage, as it were. Fortunately, you won't be doing this alone because. Cal also qualified, less impressively. Cal and I also qualified, but we did it the easy way with little RCQs. Cal winning a sealed RCQ, and I won a little Pioneer RCQ.
Yeah, like 40-something people, so definitely not 200-something.
Definitely, and definitely no Hall of Famers CVs in our top 8s, that's for sure. So yeah, we it'll be quite cool, you know, being on this journey together, trying to figure out a standard format, a meta game, and all these wonderful things. Should be pretty cool. I was actually looking. I think I mentioned already to maybe to Kel that on the Saturday evening, because it's in Naples, I'm a big football fan. Maradona's, you know, one of the, you know, god level characters in football. And so the Napoli Stadium is called the, you know, named after him, Diego Armando Maradona Stadium. And Napoli are playing on that Saturday night. So very cool. Very cool to get to do that. So pretty excited get to hit that up. Have you been to Italy before?
I have been to Italy, but not Napoli. I went to Rome a very long time ago, and a few years ago I went to Venice, so I've been there twice.
Cool. So same as me. I've also been a couple of times, but never to Naples. So yeah, should be a blast.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking to the so I played against Milan in the Pioneer Super Qualifier, and he beat me for the winning. And it's funny, we were just talking about how he was qualified for an American event, but he had to go to San Diego and he doesn't really want to go there. And he said for me that, like, worst case, I get to just have a vacation in Napoli, even if I do badly in the event. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty
How
cool,
old is
man.
Milan now? He's still having issues getting to qualify for events. Well, the qualification is not the issue. It's getting permission to play. So, do you know how old he is now?
Oh, Milan. I think he's 17, but he managed to get the qualifier. He managed get the qualification.
So, Rashan just mentioned it, but our RC is going to be in San Diego. So I think it's typically in Anaheim, DreamHack hosts their event, but this year it's going to be in San Diego. So a quick 50-minute flight for me shouldn't be too bad. And I'll stay with my family or with a girlfriend. So yeah, excited about that.
Yeah, would be cool if we could. Like, if they gave us the choice, honestly, I'd even just come there to hang out with you. But yeah, you know, they for some reason they just lock you into a specific region.
Dude, it's your region. It's what I don't understand what the problem is.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. Our region. Yeah. Just a short flight from South Africa to Italy or wherever else it is. You know, just across the road.
Speaking, I have a question for you. Sorry to interrupt you, Kiran. For Rashan. So, how did you get on Magic Twitter, and how did you find out about that? Because for me, one of the biggest hacks as far as, you know, the information age of Magic, I'm talking post MTG Goldfish and post the analytics of all the deck lists and Magic results, was finding Magic Twitter and realizing that, you know, if you follow all the top players, you don't need to necessarily subscribe for, you know, what used to be Star City Games Premium or similar services to get, you know, the inside info. Yeah. So how did you find out about that, and who are some of the most valuable follows that maybe you can educate our listeners, and maybe even Karan and I can follow some people?
It was like weird, because I was like playing, this is before I played Magic Online, I played like Arena and Paper, and I just randomly made a Twitter account. I like posted like random Arena stuff that I did, and then there's a group on Magic Online who people call the Zoomers. And they're all like just these kids under 18 who just crush all the old people in Magic Online. They're like completely, they like do really well. And like one of them just like messaged me on Twitter and asked if I just wanted to join their Discord group. And that's kind of how I got introduced to them. They were very involved in the Twitter Magic scene. And yeah, the main big helpful Twitter account, it's a pretty obvious one, is Fire Shoes. But yeah, also a lot of the grinders like Gul Dukat or Full Helmuth on Lodo, he's there, also very good. but they don't play like a lot of arena formats. They mainly just play like the old formats, the Eternal formats.
Yeah, that must be super sick. So having access to the Zuma group, are you particularly involved? Because I see tweets from other guys. You know, Karan really likes Andy Awkward from Canada from the First Strike podcast, and you know, he, obviously not a Zuma, probably closer to Karan's age, but he is in the group, and you know, he says that, you know, even though he's a Magic stalwart and he's played on many pro tours and has played with some of the best minds in Magic, that, you know, the Zoomers are kind of like supercharged in their activity and dissemination and sharing of information, and he's able to get a lot back from that. Are you very involved in that group?
A little bit. I used to be involved when I played Magic Online a while back, and then I took a break and I kind of didn't play, so I wasn't very active in the group. But now I'm kind of picking it up again. I'm kind of talking to the guys. It's fun to talk to them. They're pretty cool. Yeah, it's I'm like a little bit active.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Like it's as he says, information age and all of that. And like, you got to use your resources, you know. And you know, often throughout the years, a lot of events where I feel like I've done well personally or won or whatever, it's usually I've seen some idea somewhere, where, you know, whether it was even before Twitter age, whatever it is, and taken it. And people basically don't know what you're doing with the deck and they're unfamiliar. Like the last PDQ I won in Bangkok, that was exactly it. I played some Command the Dreadhorde deck before like it was really a thing and before it was on the map. And so every opponent was just cold to me. They had no idea what I was doing. And like they played poorly. And so when you can, you know, eke out these advantages and come up with things and find some technology and stuff before mainstream, you know, sort of media, Twitter, MTG media picks it up, huge advantage. So hopefully we can find some cool stuff for the RSPQs coming up and, you know, crush it out there. Speaking of which, just out of interest, obviously you're based in Johannesburg. You didn't play any RCQs in Johannesburg or in South Africa, in fact, for round two. Neither did I. Because believe it or not, Kel, there were no RCQs in Johannesburg or in South Africa as a whole. Just nothing. Just absolutely nothing. So, yes, bizarrely, for reasons unbeknown, this weird Italian TO that runs the European region. I reached out to some stores, and basically a lot of them said that they applied and they don't legacy. Yes, it's called legacy, legacy games or whatever.
Legacy European tour or something.
Yeah, yeah. And basically, guys, the stores were like, well, we applied and we were turned down. And when we asked them why we're turned down, they don't know. So, or better yet, they just don't get a response. So, yeah, a little frustrating. And hopefully there'll be someone, some representatives from WotC there. You know, we can try and reach out to when we're there. I started composing actually this long email to Yui. I thought I'd, you know, give him all the facts and figures again. I forgot about it. And so I must actually get back to doing it. But yeah, it's bizarre. And the complaints are pretty much the same. You know, Italy has the majority of qualifiers, and the rest of Europe, if you include South Africa and Namibia, has nothing, you know, relatively speaking. Big Magic playing countries having, you know, a handful of events. So, and some of them having none, like South Africa. So very, very interesting time. Yeah, Middle East as well. Cal making sure I don't forget his former his former home. So yeah, a weird situation that we find ourselves in. But we had to find workarounds. Rishon chose the most difficult way possible by winning a super qualifier, which is pretty crazy. I popped across the border to Namibia. I had to go across for some business. So it was good timing and had a couple of days out of it. And I managed to win a RCQ there, which is bizarre. And so little Namibia with a population and a physical population a fraction of South Africa's. I think they're like maybe 2 million people versus our 60 odd million, and a Magic population that's also probably in correlation to that, if not worse, had two RCQs, with South Africa having zero. So again, bizarre, but yeah, what can you do?
Play online. That's just the only option.
Yeah, you sound like Cal. You sound like Cal. Too old, man. Too old. But yeah, maybe one day again. I was looking through your account info on Goldfish, and I could just see like the sheer amount of events you've played in such a short amount of time, like your published results. I'm like, that's about the same amount that I've played in my whatever 15 years of of MTG, or because I'm just too lazy or just, you know, don't have the motivation or whatever to do it. So yeah, maybe we need to change that.
But the events are definitely very tough to like keep playing. I like losing focus is, it's like it's really easy to lose focus because the events are just so long and the times that you have to play and keep playing, even like off like losing, there's no like breaks. If you're playing like a long deck, like a very slow deck, like I was playing blue light control, you basically have like no downtime between rounds. With like usually paper, sometimes they just give you like a 5-minute break, like in the middle of the tournament. So yeah, it's definitely much harder to like stay focused and keep playing.
Sure, and you've also got the distractions of home, right? Like, you know, I don't know, if you live with somebody or people or whatever, there's people around or the TV's on or, you know, my Magic Online setup is I've got a laptop connected to my big screen TV. I sit on the couch with a keyboard and it's usually like a show on in the background and a music on and whatever, you know, and it's often Cal on the call, on a call with me watching and talking, you know, just talking nonsense. So yeah, very difficult
to. And so very soon a bucket of chicken tenders once you open your hot chicken business is going to be on the side of the reclining couch there. Just to make the matters worse, you know, a little handicap.
Coming soon. But yeah, it is very difficult. And particularly with ping times, which a lot of people won't understand. But yeah, the ping times, the MTGO, just the sheer response times from South Africa all the way to the US. And I've played Magic Online. I've literally played it in South America, North America, Asia, Europe. I've literally played it everywhere. And South Africa is by far just the worst in terms of, you know, speed and ping times, etc. So you've got a huge disadvantage there when you're playing a deck with a lot of actions or just, you know, a slow deck where you're just passing turns and whatever. So yeah, it's something. Has that something that's come up or made you consider deck choices or reconsider deck choices because of too many clicks and that sort of thing?
In the past it has. I remember Heliod was a deck in Modern, and that deck required like a lot of clicks. It was basically a combo deck, if you don't know what it is. It's a combo deck between Heliod and Spike Feeder, where you just gain infinite life, Spike Feeder removes a counter, you gain two, and then you put a counter back on it. Heliod deck basically just gains infinite life with the two card combo between Spike Feeder and Heliod. And at the time of like this deck breaking out, Field of the Dead was in Modern, so a lot of the control decks would just make a bunch of zombies and just attack you, even if you had the combo, because they want you to time out. And like clicking a bunch, and the ping was also an issue, so I kind of just didn't pick up Heliod at all at that point. But that's like the only time I remember it being relevant.
Yeah, fair enough. It does come into play, and you know, particularly those matches where you and your opponent are doing a similar amount of actions, and let's say it's a, I don't know, slow deck versus slow deck. End of the day, you always on the back foot, you know, you're always going to be on the back foot with time if it's one of those long drawn out matches, you know, more often than not, assuming you both play at a similar pace. And it's something that does come up, but it has gotten better over the years as our, you know, connectivity's got a lot better. You can only imagine what it was like playing MTGO on dial up. I don't even know if you know what a dial up modem was. I have
no idea what a dial up is.
Yeah, it's internet speeds. I don't know, Kel, what kind of internet speeds are we talking about? Like, it's not even a meg. It's like, I don't know. I don't even know what is the unit of measurement, but it's really like.
Slow. Yeah, you have to wait for images to load.
Yeah. It's, No, it is no joke. It was hard out there. Anyway, it's cool that you're on this train, and yeah, hopefully this is, as Cal says, this passion's been fired, and it's great to have someone doing well. It's a long time since like new Magic players have come through and have done something of significance. You know, that is, you know, and that isn't like, you know, winning the store championship or whatever. So, you know, doing well in Magic Online is as I've always maintained, listeners of this podcast will know, I'm a big advocate for it in terms of the competitiveness and what you can get out of it. So if someone does well on Magic Online, I always have time to have time for them, you know. So it's, I know how difficult it is. So it's awesome that you're doing this thing, man. And long may it continue. I think with that, I think we're gonna, the one last thing we'd like to talk about, and although we started this off, this discussion, by talking about competitiveness and how we love that drive, the one exception that I make, and I think Kel's the same, in terms of competitive play, is Cube, and Vintage Cube in particular. I love it, and maybe him to a lesser extent. I absolutely love Vintage Cube. So the Holiday Cube of MTGO, every year, I'm drawn to it. And this year, there's been some changes. There's been a lot of changes. And I kept on wondering why I wasn't doing well. My win rates were particularly low, the lowest it's probably ever been. And I was trying to figure out why. And then I think I messaged Cal the other day and I said something along the lines of, you know what? I think it's all these new cards that have been printed in the last few years. The power level is so high that they've fundamentally have shifted your pick orders and how you evaluate things in the cube. And things that were slam dunk 5 years ago are, you know, just fine now, where like Treachery 5 years ago was, you know, one of the highest picks in the cube. Now it's, you know, it's fine. It's fine. You're happy. You play it. But, you know, these new cars are just so dumb and they're just becoming better and better. I'm not sure. Have either of you played with Minsk and Boo in the cube or ever in any format?
I've never played against the card, but I have seen it going crazy in Legacy, but it looks weird. I don't know the card to be so good, but apparently it is.
Yeah, Cal, have you had any experience with it?
No, I haven't played with or against it, but I do constantly see people whining on Twitter, and I'm sure it's valid because, you know, probably 3 or 4 months ago at this point, I'm not sure when Baldur's Gate came out, but when it did, the card immediately started posting results on Magic Online, and I think Anurag Das won a maybe back-to-back like legacy challenges with like 4-color Minsk and Boo decks. So I have, you know, I'm not surprised in the least.
So I didn't know the card. I mean, I heard about it or whatever, but, you know, I've seen it in Legacy decks, lists. And then I was facing the famed Opa on the in Vintage Cube. And I think I was doing well against him. I was like, you know, I thought, oh, I'm doing well. This game's going well. I've got the upper hand the entire time. And he cast Minsk and Boo against me. And he just absolutely destroyed me. As you look at the card, you read the card, and you think, okay, it's kind of good. And when you play against it, like, I can't describe, like, the disconnect between what I was reading and what I was interpreting versus what it actually did. It was day and night. And then I think game 2 or 3 or whatever, he cast it again against me, and the similar sort of thing. You know, I was ahead, he cast this thing, and it just destroys me. And so the next draft I did, I saw it, and I picked it, and then I played it. And immediately, I was convinced, and I messaged Cal this, and like, apart from power and maybe like Solrin, I think it's the best card in the cube. Like, I think you pick it above anything else. I think it's that powerful, as insane as that sounds. A red, green, 4-mana planeswalker. It's just so absolutely ridiculous. Like, its power level is off the charts. And it won't make sense until you play it. You just have to play it. But like, that's my feeling. And maybe I'm too high on it, but like, it just felt just unbeatable. Like, it just this ridiculous threat. The fact that this creature gets haste is the problem. That's the real problem, that it just makes a creature. So it has essentially has two activations every turn. One being make a free hasty trampling creature, and the other one being whatever, you know, put counters on or sacking something. And then you read it again, you're like, oh wait, I sack it, I deal damage, and then I draw cards equal to the, are you kidding me?
It's just draw four cards.
Yeah, just draw four. I'm going to dome something. I'm going to kill your planeswalker, sack it, kill a creature, and I'm going to draw four. Like, wow. Just wow. So, you know, that's tip of the day. Pick Minsk and Boom above just about anything else.
Yeah, and just some of these other cards I wanted to mention here since you brought it up. Just most of the Modern Horizons 2 cards, you know, some Modern Horizons 1 cards slip through the cracks as well. Then, you know, the recurring joke that I have with Kiran is anything printed in the year 2020 or after, and then some of the strange niche commander cards like Laelia and Minsk and Boo. So as far as some of the very, very top ones, we have Oko, obviously. That's a standard printing that got banned in, you know, most formats. Ragavan, Solitude, you know, the interactive elementals from Modern Horizons 2, Fury is up there as well. Something that we spoke about earlier in the podcast, and that's seemingly taking over all formats, I think, besides vintages at this point, is Fable, another top card for Vintage Cube. Sheldred the Apocalypse. No ETBs, can you imagine? Card that's dominating all formats somehow. Just, you know, maybe like Minsk and Boo in the sense you read the card, you're like, all right, seems pretty well statted. The ability is good and actually turns out to be a completely game-warping effect. And in particular, in the Vintage Cube, where you have, you know, Wheel of Fortunes and Time Twisters, stuff like that. Some others, Urza's Saga, Archon of Cruelty, I think has been a game changer. Not only for the reanimation archetype, but something you could hardcast or sneak and show in. And then Underworld Breach as well from Theros. So yeah, those are some of the ones off the top of my head.
Those are some hitters for sure. Those are some hitters. I don't know if you mentioned Oko as well. Our friend Oko is probably number two on the Planeswalker ranks. Renin 6 with looping strip mines and wastelands. Also, not to be sniffed at. But yeah, Rishan, how's your experience been on the cube streets?
Well, I just want to say, I think like half the cards he named are all banned in Legacy, just to put into context. Like Oko, Ren, Ragavan, a lot of these cards, Breach, they're all banned in Legacy. But yeah, it's weird. So for my like Vintage Cube experience, I think I played it like last year, and I was just like doing really well by just drafting like these Jeskai control artifact tinker piles. And now it's like changed my view in the format. Now I just like pick random Jeskai cards just whenever, just because I'm so attached to like that archetype. And then my deck's just never good because I just keep like trying to force Jeskai. But maybe I can like shift into picking better cards. But yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, fortunately, depending, you don't have to, right? It depends on what your objective is. And this is something where like I'll be drafting, and like the last one we did, I'm drafting and I'm picking some good blue cards, and these white, powerful white cards are wheeling, like Hero of Bladehold and the 3-mana 1/4 that makes a creature when it attacks, that 1-mana army thing, I don't know, whatever it's called. Like all these great white cards start wheeling.
Starfall.
It's just so good. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I need to move into white, and I don't want to draft dumb white creatures, but that's what I end up doing, right? And like, it's just so good. But like, if your objective is to have fun, or you know, if you want to have fun and play artifact stuff or whatever it is, then you know, do what you want to do. Like I hate to play like these red decks, for example, or the mono white decks. I really don't like it, but sometimes you got to do it, you know. And the win rates are usually pretty good on those archetypes as a whole. Although I have noticed, I haven't actually looked through the spoiler, but just from drafting it, it feels like they have tried to tone down the aggressive decks a little bit by cutting back in particular on one drops. That's kind of my observation, which I think perhaps in some of the previous iterations, the mono red and mono white decks, win percentages were probably just too high. And so I think they tried to throttle that a little bit. That's my suspicion.
Yeah, so what exactly is your win rate? Because you say you have a bad win rate, but I think this is more like a confirmation bias thing that your brain tricks you into, because, you know, you haven't been getting trophies and, you know, you're seeing other people posting trophies, but you're like 2-1-ing every league, right?
Yeah, I don't know the actual win rate, but like, basically 2-1 every league. So yeah, I guess it'll be around the 60, 65, 66% somewhere there. But it's, you're right. It's much better to 3-0 a few and then like 0-2. You know, you're much happier doing that. You know, spread the wins and losses in an appropriate way. Spike a few and, you know,
drop. You have like an 80% win rate, and no trophies, and it just doesn't feel the same.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, oh damn it, I suck at this. You're right. It is one of those things, but. Yeah, I think Cube's great. I think it's great fun. I think it teaches people, I don't know, great deck building skills and, you know, the drafting element. And the gameplay behind Vintage Cube is obviously very high because, you know, the most difficult cards, the most difficult interactions and combos and all these weird things that come up, that makes it pretty cool. So highly recommend Vintage Cube. I know some people, like famed local Cube enthusiast, Cube Overlord, Roland Richards, he's against it because he doesn't like the power aspect. And he feels it's too game warping. And, you know, it does have a point because it does feel kind of terrible when your opponent goes turn one, Sol Ring, and you're sitting there with, you know, tap land go, you know.
Turn one Sol Ring is a pretty tame opening in that format, to be honest. like one of the, you could just get tinkered on turn one, or you could get like natural ordered on turn one, and you don't play a single card and you're facing like a Blightsteel Colossus.
Yeah, a Minskin Buta and one off a Lotus.
Yeah, I did that. That's the thing I did. Black Lotus, Minskin Buta. That was pretty... Just conceded. He just conceded. He didn't even bother. Like, that's what you have to do sometimes. But,
smart opponent.
Smart opponent. Done wasting time, you see. My kind of magic player. Just quit. Just quit when you think you're going to lose.
It's like you use the excuse of like, well, I want to conceal my deck. I don't want them to know what I'm playing. But in reality, you just don't want to play the game. You just want out.
Well, yeah, because you know that there's no way you're beating a turn one, yeah. Whatever, Winston Boo.
Get me out.
Yeah, Jace or whatever the case is. Anyway, that's I'm actually, that's what I'm going to do after this. Old friend of mine, Sanjay, Cal will remember. Probably like 3 times older than Rishan, actually. He's in the other room. He just got in. He got in from Mauritius, so he's came to hang out. We're gonna do some Vintage Cubes this evening, and looking forward to it. I guess anything else you guys want to say, Cal, Rishan?
Oh, nothing for me. No. I just want to say congrats on both of you for qualifying for the Naples event as well.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. Thanks, bud. But yeah, thanks for coming on, and it's good. Look, it's good to hear your story, and it hopefully inspires some other people, some other locals in particular, to get on to MTGO and you know, try and play these events. But yeah, we're looking forward to working with you and on for Naples and San Diego respectively, and coming up with some cool stuff. But thanks for your time, and we're out.